Blog Talk Radio.
Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Well, good evening. Welcome back to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful, clean, and refreshing Southern California, and I am so tickled that you could join us tonight, either live or by download, because tonight we are going to be talking about death, and in particular about near-death experiences and after-death communications with Dr. Jeffrey Long, who is a practicing radiation oncologist in Gallup, New Mexico. This is going to be an absolutely fascinating show, so you're not going to want to miss it. Let's just take a short break to let our sponsor speak. Hold on.
Have you ever said to yourself, I want to quit smoking? Have you ever felt guilty about the money you are spending on cigarettes or what smoking may be doing to your health? Well, here's a fast, effective, and affordable way to quit smoking forever. Creative Guided Imagery and Hypnosis has an incredible stop smoking program that you can use in the privacy of your own home by simply listening to a wonderfully relaxing CD. Along with the 10-page instruction booklet, you get an outstanding homeopathic formula that immediately takes away those strong urges to ensure your complete success. Now, most quit smoking programs normally cost up to $400. You can get this program for a fraction of that cost. So why wait a day longer? Simply go to creativeguidedimagery.com. Save time, save money, and save your health by going to creativeguidedimagery.com. That's creativeguidedimagery.com.
Great. And now just a few things before we bring Dr. Jeff on. Next weekend, August 2nd and 3rd in Los Angeles at the Airport Sheraton, Lee Harris and Story Waters is having their monumental seminar called The Time to Awaken. This is a fantastic transformational weekend, and there is still time to register. They just added another block of rooms because so many are attending. People are flying in from all over. So, and not only is it transformational for me, but I am so excited to meet so many Law of Attraction Radio listeners out there. So if you want to sign up for this incredible weekend with Lee and Story, go to limitlessness.com. That's limitlessness.com. And now Thursday, July 31st, we're having Georgina Beaumont live from London, who is an adult indigo. She has some really, really incredible talents that have to do with love and peace and even astrology. We'll be talking about the 888 special broadcast of Peace and Prosperity Meditation for the United States, and she has a message to all of those who live outside of the United States, why it's so important to participate in this meditation. Georgina has a huge message of love and light to give to the world, so please join us on Thursday. And as I just mentioned, put 888, August 8th, 2008, on your calendars for this Prosperity Consciousness Meditation. It will be at 808 a.m. or 8:08 p.m., or you can listen to it anytime during the day. You just need to go to lawofattractiontools.com and click the Listen Live, and you can listen to it, and you're going to have 30 minutes of pure bliss. I can promise you that. And then the last announcement next Sunday. I want to mention that New York Times bestselling author Sandra Ann Taylor will be with us again, and she's bringing her sister Sharon Klinger. They have written another best-selling book called The Secrets of Success, and truly, there are some secrets in there that I have not heard of before, and I thought that they were terrific. I also want to mention that Sharon is considered to be a medium's medium. In other words, this is who other renowned psychics go to answer. It's just going to be a great show, so tune in. And, you know, when I started this show about 17 months ago, I really wanted to keep the focus on scientific aspects surrounding the universal law of attraction. But during this time, some amazing things happened. As Greg Braden mentioned to me, science is now married to metaphysics and spirituality. Although we know some scientists are still dragging their feet on this idea of the fourth and fifth dimensions surrounding consciousness, it is extremely hard for me to find guests that do not reflect this marriage. In other words, metaphysics and spirituality subjects that have been around for thousands of years are now being scientifically documented. That is why this show is now dealing with issues of angels, channeling, indigo children, collective consciousness, and even retro intention, as written by Lynn McTaggart. If ever there's a time in history to have an open mind, this is it. And that is why I am so thrilled to have Dr. Jeff on the show tonight. We're going to be talking about a taboo subject that creates fear and sadness, which is known as death. But I think it will be a turning point in the subject to be one of love and peace and acceptance that death perhaps does not really exist. It's simply another phase of living. So I am so thrilled to bring Dr. Jeffrey Long, who, as I mentioned, is a practicing oncologist in New Mexico and is the leading near-death experience research. Dr. Long founded the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation and After-Death Communication Research Foundation and Out-of-Body Experience Research Foundation. This family of website is the largest publicly accessible collection of exceptional human experiences of their type available. And even portions of the Near-Death Experience website has been posted in over 20 different foreign languages. This whole effect or effort is leading to increasing awareness worldwide and across cultural boundaries. We all share these types of experiences, and they are similar to a degree that is medically inexplicable. The potential to heighten world understanding is obvious and extremely, extremely important. Dr. Jeff, I'm so thrilled you are with us tonight.
Well, Jules, it's a real pleasure for me to be here tonight with you also. As you said earlier, this is certainly going to be a very interesting, exciting show. We certainly have a lot to talk about. The fear and sadness that you said that's been surrounding death, I think we're popping that bubble of illusion through the websites and our worldwide outreach.
Isn't that wonderful? And all I can say is wow, because I think this is absolutely wonderful. But I can imagine that you've created quite a stir in the medical community with all this. How are the physicians reacting to this information?
You know, it's interesting. The substantial majority of physicians at this point in time still do not accept that near-death experiences are medically inexplicable. Now, that's not based on their review of the literature or their careful consideration of arguments, pros and cons. It's just simply based on the fact that they can't conceive that it's possible. Now, the interesting thing is when I sit down with physicians one-on-one or to a small group and they find out that this is the research area that I'm involved with and we start talking about some of the evidence, the substantial majority of physicians will say, oh, wow, that's interesting. I get it. There really is evidence justifying the reality of near-death experiences. It's really not one of these, woo-woo things or things that is that a lot of people believe in without a lot of evidence behind it. And actually, the substantial majority of physicians, at least when I'm talking with them, come to accept the reality of near-death experience. It's all based on the evidence, Jules, and that's what our websites and research effort have been so focused on and so much about.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, we all know Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a marvelous MD who has died, but she was known for the five stages of grieving. Dr. Ross came to the conclusion that death does not exist either. Did you come up with the same conclusion in your research?
Yeah, there's no question about that in my mind. Understand, I guess for the sake of your assume your listeners, most of them will know what a near-death experience it is, but just in the event that some don't, what I'm talking about here is studying experiences where people basically die. They may clinically die, their heart stops, or at least they're so severely physically compromised from some illness or trauma that they're unconscious. And yet, at this point of unconsciousness, they have a highly detailed, often very lucid experience that, as you mentioned earlier, is similar all around the world. So from my point of view, medically, it's absolutely impossible to have this kind of organized, lucid experience, which is so similar as shared among so many people, at a time when, medically speaking, your unconsciousness, the very definition of unconscious means no consciousness, no ability to have any type of memory, and yet that's not what our near-death experiencers are describing.
Wow. So it really doesn't have to do with the drugs in the brain that are, have you found that?
Yeah. If there's really nothing that could account for instance, several of the most evidential parts of near-death experience, about half of them early in the near-death experience, their consciousness separates from the body and is above their physical body most of the time, on the average, maybe about 15 feet. And from that vantage point, they can see their unconscious body or often their frantic resuscitation efforts. And this is ongoing while they're unconscious or even clinically dead. And part of the study that I've done is to see how accurate these observations are. We've studied hundreds and hundreds of near-death experiences that involve these types of observations. Now, medically speaking, I would be able to pick up on inaccuracy or false impressions or anything that could account for an unreal observation because of my medical background, and they're in this state so often describing their medical resuscitation procedures. What we're finding is about 97-98% of the time what they see and hear when they're in that out-of-body state, usually early in the near-death experience, is absolutely accurate with no error whatsoever. And you can't explain that by hypoxia, which means low oxygen levels in the blood, or by brain chemistry, or by any other medical explanation at all. You simply cannot have that type of accurate observations while you're unconscious. It's medically inexplicable.
Wow. Okay, so you mentioned the floating up outside the body. Is this what typically happens during near-death experiences? I have a problem. NDE.
Yeah, we could call them NDE. That's less of a mouthful. I like
that,
Jules.
Yeah, right, okay.
During an NDE, it's only about half of the time they actually have that. Now, the other typical elements of an NDE, besides that initial out-of-body experience, people have heard the archetypical traveling through a tunnel. Very often there's a bright light at the end of the tunnel. They may encounter deceased relatives. They may review all or a portion of their prior life experiences. Very often they come to a decision with other beings that they encounter about whether they are going to return to their body, and then they do so. So just in a very quick nutshell, that's the near-death experience elements. Very few near-death experiences have all those elements. And actually, most NDEs have only a few of those elements. But by the time you study large numbers of NDEs, and we have on our website, we've studied, believe it or not, 1,600 NDEs.
Wow.
The pattern is extremely clear. These elements occur over and over, and generally in a very consistent order.
Wow, that's really something. And from all over the world, too.
Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, portions of our website that study NDEs have been translated into over 20 different foreign languages. That's all toward the credit of our webmaster, Jody, who that's been sort of her second full-time job to do this. But as a result of that, we have more experiences shared from all around the world in first person. In other words, people in non-English-speaking countries that share in English, or due to a team of, believe it or not, over 100 volunteer translators, we have people share in their native language, their NDE. We have our volunteers translate it into English, and then we share it back with the world. So as you said earlier, our website is absolutely the largest publicly available collection of NDEs by far, by orders of magnitude actually, than any other source in the world. So we're basing our observation not on wishful thinking or based on what prior research has demonstrated, but this is purely unique research driven by studying the NDEs shared with our website. And it is, exactly as I said, medically inexplicable. There is no explanation for it. Every shred of evidence that we're encountering through these 1,600 NDEs suggests that consciousness, who we are, our very being, survives our physical bodily death, that there is an afterlife, and there's a wonderful afterlife.
Wow, I love hearing that. But let's talk about NDE in another country, say, well, let's say Iraq.
Sure.
Now,
how
do they react? I mean, different culture altogether. They don't have the same, but are the experiences similar?
And that's a really critical question. In fact, one of the major study components of our NDE website has been to study NDEs from very different, if you will, non-Western cultures. I actually wrote a portion of an academic book chapter on this very topic. We have portions of our website in Arabic and other non-Western languages so that people can read the questions in their own native non-Western language, write it up, respond to it in their own non-Western language, and then we have volunteer translators share that. So we have some of the best way to observe and study NDEs from non-Western civilizations that's ever been possible before. And the answer is, well, the question, of course, that you're getting to before we get to the answer is, are these non-Western NDEs similar or are they dissimilar to English or Western NDEs? And of course, the implication is very significant. If the NDEs are completely different, then of course that suggests they're culturally derived. NDEs are probably due to prior belief systems or what we all learned as part of our upbringing. And that would suggest a very different cause of NDEs. But, Jules, if the NDEs from non-Western countries are very, very similar to Western NDEs, well, what a shock that would be. That would suggest that there is a cause of NDEs that is independent of our cultural beliefs, our religious beliefs, and suggests that there's something much, much more going on. And the answer is, they're remarkably similar.
Wow.
I've been absolutely astounded now with about 25 non-Western civilization NDEs at how amazingly similar that they are to Western NDEs. No question about that. That which causes NDEs, that which allows the experience of the NDE to unfold, is clearly something separate from our prior belief system, what we were taught would happen after death, from religious beliefs, from even radically different cultures from all around the world, all of them pointing to the same cause of NDEs, and that being that there really is something going on in this universe other than what we know on Earth, that there really is that higher consciousness, divine, or God, as it's all been variably called by NDEers themselves.
Right, right. One universal power that's kind of in charge of everything here, I would think. What about what happens in a NDE occurrence if the person is blind or deaf? What do you have any information on that?
Yeah, sure do, Jules. Boy, it's almost like you got the best questions here. Let's talk about blind NDEs. Okay.
Okay.
People that have vision for some number of years of their life and then become completely blind may have vision in their dreams or may have some remembrance of visual impressions. But Jules, not people that are born blind from birth. People born blind from birth, absolutely physically impossible for them to have any visual impressions whatsoever. They don't see in their dreams. They may have in their dreams may contain the sense of hearing or touch or olfactory gustatory sensations, the remaining four senses, but not vision. It's impossible.
Right.
And yet, near-death experiences have been described in people blind from birth. And guess what? They have stunningly visual near-death experiences, not fragmentary, not disorganized, not maybe. But what they describe are near-death experiences that are typical of those that have vision. Same types of elements, remarkable detail described, and I've actually spent a great deal of time talking with a lady called Vicky, who is blind from birth. Absolutely amazing to talk to these individuals blind from birth. They're they're always so excited to talk about the one time in their life when they were able to see. The only thing none of us will ever be sure of is whether they see color. They describe the objects and the beings and the other people that they saw as being different shades of brightness. And interestingly, too, the one person I talked to, blind from birth, that had an NDE, Vicky, she describes her vision as basically seeing things in 360 degrees, in other words, in all directions around her, which is very interesting. It doesn't have the visual limitations that we all do with sort of the pie-shaped visual fields due to the location of our eyes and our eye sockets. But Vicky's not the only one. Other researchers have described other people blind from birth who've had remarkably visual NDEs.
So in other words, they actually see maybe people in this experiment? I mean, they could see like their parents or somebody that they've never really seen before.
Absolutely. Well, in fact, everything they're seeing, they've never seen before. When I talked to Vicky, the first time she ever had any visual impression was in the emergency room right after her nearly fatal auto accident, and all of a sudden, boom, she saw herself lying down on a stretcher down below her. She was in, as we described earlier, that out-of-body phase that's common early in the course of NDEs. And she saw a body lying down there. She had vision for the first time in her life. And Jules, imagine what her first reaction would be to be able to see for the first time in her life. You probably can't. She was terrified. This was so unfamiliar to be able to see, so outside of her entire life experience, and she was I think she was about 22 years old at the time of this, that she was just absolutely frightened and horrified. It took her a while to calm down and correlate her sense of feel of her long hair and how she felt the ring on her finger. She finally was able to correlate what she had only known in her prior life through the sense of touch with what she was now seeing through, for the first time in her life, a sense of vision. And then and only then did she say, "Oh my, that's me down below."
Wow. How astounding. That is wonderful. Well, what about the deaf then?
Well, that's another really good question. If you're deaf sometime later on in your life, your dreams will still have auditory, that means sound, in them, or voices, or you can basically hear. So you still remember what hearing is like, and you still have the ability to have memories or recollections involve hearing. But Jules, once again, if you're born without the ability to hear, then you don't know what hearing is. You don't know what sound is. It's an abstraction. It's something that you can't even imagine. And yet, in our website, we've encountered the first person who was born deaf, born completely without the ability to hear, and yet had a near-death experience. What's very interesting about the NDE is that she was communicating with actually a fairly large group of deceased relatives in part of his NDE, and yet he was able to understand them. A lot of NDEers call this telepathic communication, but this clearly was outside of any possible ordinary sense that he'd had. It didn't involve any visual impressions. It didn't involve any tactile, it means touch, like Braille. He was just simply standing and communicating with a large number of deceased relatives, and he understood them perfectly, and in turn, he was understood perfectly by them. So it's somewhat analogous to hearing, and that's the first NDE of that type that's ever been described in the world's literature. So absolutely no question about it. Regardless of the handicap you have, NDEs cross all physical boundaries and are independent of any prior life physical handicap that one might have. And as you and your listeners can easily imagine, that's, again, some of the strongest evidence that NDEs are for real.
Oh, yeah. Now, I want to ask this one question and then move on to getting specifics of NDEs. What about in the case of suicide?
I'm sorry?
In suicide.
Oh, suicide.
And they don't make it. And they come back. What happens?
Well, first of all, one thing that NDEers, that's near-death experiencers, if you will, I'll say it, one thing they come back with almost every single time if they've committed suicide and nearly die and come back and are able to tell about their near-death experience. Those that have tried to commit suicide, had an NDE, and come back to share with the world, almost uniformly come back with the belief that suicide is not the answer, that they were wrong, in fact, they were extremely wrong, and that we need to live out our life on Earth no matter how difficult. So people that have an NDE as a result of suicide are much, much, much less likely to attempt suicide again later in their life, which is very, very interesting. Now, as far as the types of experiences that NDEers have that try to commit suicide and have their NDE as a result of that, they're actually identical to people that have their life-threatening event as a result of some cause other than suicide. Mm-hmm. Same types of elements, a small percentage are frightening, the overwhelming majority are very blissful, peaceful. They may encounter deceased relatives, tunnel, light, all the elements that occur from all causes of NDEs are all there.
Wow. That's terrific. Okay. A new solution to mental illness here when you try to take your life. So this is cool, but don't do it.
Yeah, and that's what the NDEers would say. If they have an NDE, that's the one critical thing that they learn. No matter how else people had their NDE as a result of any other life-threatening event, they never come back with such uniform belief that suicide is wrong as suicidal NDEers. No question about that.
Wow, that's wonderful. Okay, let's take the whole scenario then. What is the typical scenario of people is first when they have, can we go with a heart attack?
Sure. Here's what happens when you have a heart attack. At the moment the heart stops, when you have a heart attack, that means cardiac arrest, and that means the heart stops. And once the heart stops, of course, blood flow to the brain stops immediately, because you have to have the heart pumping to pump blood up there. From the time blood stops flowing to the brain, within 10 to 20 seconds, if you're measuring the electrical activity in the brain through an EEG or electroencephalogram, if you will, fancy measurement of electrical activity of the brain, from the moment your heart stops beating, 10 to 20 seconds later, electrical activity goes absolutely flat. It's not detectable by any device. So you're unconscious, and above and beyond that, you have no electrical activity in your brain, and you can't have a conscious experience, or can you? Because that's the time that people have their near-death experiences. That's the time they see themselves being resuscitated. Sometimes they can even see the electrocardiogram monitor documenting that their heart electrical activity is absolutely flat.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a time people have these vivid, dramatic, and highly detailed NDEs when they shouldn't be, when they've had cardiac arrests or heart attacks, which is one of the more common causes, of course, of NDEs.
Wow. So, okay, say they can see that, so they are able to see the body. When, at what point do they understand, or what point does the white light, which I'm assuming is a common occurrence,
oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
What time
do they see it?
Yeah. What's the regular protocol?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, no two NDEs are the same, and
right.
Occasionally the order of elements of an NDE are somewhat different. But in general, by the time they encounter a light that's often described as very bright and has sort of a mystical characteristic, light is used, but that's not really a good term because we all are familiar with light, and yet this is... it's light in the sense that it's bright, but it's very, very different from what we encounter from Earth. If you talk to NDEers, and this light, like I said, has a mystical component. There may be a sense of love or peace with it. They may sense that there's a being associated with the light, even if the being is not clearly defined. So that occurs. It may occur. Almost always they have to have gone through the out-of-body part of the near-death experience. Very often the light is at the end of a tunnel, or they may encounter a light in some unearthly, or other people have said, heavenly realm. And at that point in time, the light may be there. And some of the people that have the deepest and most transcendent NDEs, they may actually have a sense that their being or their consciousness is merging or becoming a part of the light. And that's also a very dramatic thing, fairly uncommonly described, but again, very consistently described in terms of it being an encounter with something overwhelmingly loving, overwhelmingly knowledgeable, overwhelmingly compassionate. And even though I've read 1,600 of these, geez, I still get goosebumps every time I read some of these really dramatic encounters and uniting with this supreme mystical light that NDEers describe.
So then we can assume whether you come back or you don't come back. This is the typical experience with anybody who dies.
Well, I believe that to be true, and in fact, some strong evidence collaborating that impression comes from so-called shared near-death experiences. Occasionally, two people encounter a life-threatening event at the same time, and we have an occasional NDE where there are basically two people in the out-of-body state at the same time as a result of both of them suffering severe injuries. They can talk, they interact, they share concepts, and are aware of what's going on, and yet one of them may say, you know, one of them may be injured more severely than the other and die. And so physically, they die, and their consciousness doesn't return, whilst the other person who interacted with that other person in the out-of-body state can return and tell the tale. So that's some of the strongest evidence that they are interacting with, sharing with a person who is, if you will, permanently dead in the out-of-body state during an NDE, so-called shared NDEs. Again, further strong evidence that that's the pathway that we all go through when we die.
Wow. So I would also assume that nurses or family members who are around, perhaps a person with cancer, may hear a person say, I see the light before they pass on?
Oh, absolutely. That's been referred to as deathbed visions is the most mm-hmm. popular term for it. And a small percentage of people that are near death will have a fairly striking sudden return of consciousness. They'll suddenly be looking as if they're looking at something. They'll smile. They may sit up in bed even though they've been flat in bed for days. And if they're able to communicate, they'll often be interacting with what either seems to be a deceased friend, a relative of theirs, or a spiritual being. And it's almost always their eyes light up, they smile. It's a very joyous type of experience that they have very near the end of their life. And moreover, we have, again, because we've studied so many experiences, we have a small collection now of so-called shared deathbed visions. In other words, these people that are dying may look up or see something, and yet one or several people around them sees the same thing. It's a light. It's a voice. It's some sort of like some of the elements that you encounter in NDEs, and it's all part of the spectrum of experiences that NDEs are. But no question that absolutely really does happen. It's based on research I've done and plenty of other research that actually goes back to the 1800s. So there's no doubt that that's a part of what some lucky few experience.
Now, what about children? What do they have the same experience, or is it slightly different?
Well, you know, that's a really good question because it's, of course, children, and especially the very youngest children, say in the first few years of life, they wouldn't have religious beliefs firmly set up. They wouldn't have the ability to have a lot of cultural values established. They wouldn't have had any concept of what it's like to die. To very young children, that's an abstraction and not anything that they can even grasp or understand. So a real interesting question is, what about the very youngest children in the first few years of life? What are their NDEs like? Well, because we have so many NDEs, we have the largest population of small children, say age 5 and under, that have ever been studied in the world. In the book I'm writing, and it will come out in about, maybe a year, year and a half, we're actually going to release the results of the studying a fairly good-sized group of these very youngest children. And the answer is their NDEs are strikingly similar to adults. They share their experiences decades later when they're adults. And by the way, it's been very well established that NDEs are not, details are not forgotten, nor are details embellished or added onto, even if NDEs are shared years to decades later. So from other research that's been done, we're very confident of the accuracy of these accounts shared even a long time later. So from our group of adults that shared these dramatic NDEs that they had as small children, again, very striking similarity to adults. Again, completely consistent with the concept that all converging lines of evidence point to, all our research lines of evidence suggesting that NDEs are not a product of prior beliefs or religious values or anything else. It seems to be what the overwhelming majority of NDEers themselves actually believe, and that is they've encountered the divine, God, higher consciousness, the all-powerful, as that concept may be variously described.
Wow. So let me ask you then, what happens when they come back and they're aware of what happened? What changes occur in their life?
And that's a real good question. It's so-called after effects. After effects refers to how the person changes after they've had this incredibly powerful close brush with death, an incredibly powerful experience, and then they return to life. Now what? Well, because the NDEs are so different from their pre-existing belief system most of the time, because it's so unexpected and such a powerful experience, it takes the NDEers on an average 7 years to fully integrate the experience into their life. I mean, it's a very slow process, and because it involves some huge changes. There have been, and there's been a number of studies on this, some very consistent changes in people's lives after an NDE. And what we find is that people tend to be, the NDEers, are more loving. They're more compassionate. They care more about positive relationships. They will avoid relationships that are not positive and embrace new relationships that are positive. They are noticeably less materialistic. Very often they change jobs in order to have a job that allows them to help other people compassionately. And so there's some, and of course, NDEers almost uniformly don't fear death, and almost uniformly believe that there is definitely an afterlife because, well, absolutely, after all, Jules, they experienced it.
Yeah.
So that's very typical when you talk to an NDEer, especially if it's been many years after their NDE. That's what how they'll describe that they've changed. Oh, by the way, this isn't just a result of them nearly dying. There's studies that these so-called after effects that I'm studying are talking about, studies that document these, study people that nearly died but did not have an NDE, and then people that nearly died and had an NDE. And it's the people that had the NDE that by far and away are much more likely to have these types of changes. So it really is the NDE experience itself that leads directly to these overwhelmingly positive changes in their lives.
Wow. So some develop any particular gifts when they get back, like healing or?
You know, it's really interesting. NDEers, in fact, I was just looking up the statistics on that today. About half come back believing that they have some psychic or paranormal gift following the NDE that they did not have before. Now, that's been very interesting to read about the variety of these types of gifts. Some people believe they have healing gifts. Some people believe that they're more intuitive or precognitive. As best I can tell, one of the most common themes in the types of paranormal or psychic gifts that they have is an intuition that's probably related to, and this is my hypothesis at this point in time, this isn't the product of research, but as best I can tell from studying large numbers of NDEs, I think these people become much more compassionate, much more loving. They become much more aware of people around them, and so I think as a result of that, what they may be calling intuitive is actually just a product of more compassionate awareness of people around them. And that can reveal itself as being markedly intuitive. And that's one of the more common gifts. And yet, some people describe healing. Some people have gone on to become professional healers, psychics. A number of psychics have had near-death experience that do that professionally, although not large numbers. But again, it's just, you know, pretty much any psychic or paranormal gift you can think of, at one point or another, a near-death experiencer believes that they've developed that gift following their NDE.
Hmm. So I'm also wondering if they're coming back realizing that we're all connected as human beings, that we're really not separate. I mean, we're all connected. We're all one.
You've nailed it. You've really hit on one of the most striking things that NDEers come back with, and that's very interesting because Judeo-Christian teachings, religious belief teachings, doesn't really talk, and virtually none of the major world religions or belief systems or values that we all share, almost none of those existing belief systems really emphasize the concept that we're all interconnected, we're all one, that we're all a part of each other at a level that's far beyond our physical awareness on this earth. And yet, NDEers, when they talk about a concept of either being separate from others or one or connected with others, essentially uniformly, and again, this is a product of studying hundreds and hundreds of NDEs, all with that same type of concept, come back saying, we really are connected, we really are one, we really are all part of that greater source. And it really is very important to NDEers to understand that, to realize how if you harm another person, you're really in some very important way harming yourself. But conversely, if you're loving or compassionate to another person, you're actually loving and compassionate to yourself and really all other people as well. That is a profoundly significant, remarkably consistent finding among the over 1,000 NDEs that we've studied. And that's really interesting, because that clearly does not derive from pre-existing belief systems. That clearly is an important spiritual concept that seems to be important for NDEers to come to understand during their experience.
Wow, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, here you are. I'm an ecology specialist. So you have, I'm sure, a lot of terminal cases. What is it that you have learned, and how has this actually helped your practice?
Well, that's a good
question. I'm sorry to get so personal, but I'm just so
curious.
This is great. Because you have a huge message to get out to the world.
Yeah. Oh, I really do, and believe me, I really get that. And you're right, I am an oncologist. My type of oncology work is so-called radiation oncology, which is the use of radiation to treat cancer. And so you're absolutely right. There's a large number of people that I treat with radiation. The chance for cure is either extremely small or there is no chance for cure, and we're simply using radiation therapy to try to relieve symptoms and make them feel better. There's no question, as I look back over the 8 years that I've been doing this work in the near-death experience arena, and it has definitely changed my attitude as a physician. I can't encounter these NDEs week after week after week with so many of them, I think, without adopting some of the values, some of the beliefs that the NDEers themselves have. There's no question that I, as a physician, am much more loving, compassionate, caring for my patients, interested. It's easy for me to go the extra mile because it's what I want to do. It's not like I have to do or a job, or it's just a part of who I am as a physician now, and much, much more so than it was, say, 10 or 20 years ago when I was practicing medicine. And I think, especially as a doctor that fights that most feared diagnosis, cancer, is one that has to be the front line of handling patients like that. There's no doubt that studying NDEs has given me an immense amount of courage. I don't fear the death of my patients because I know they're going to have an afterlife, and I know that afterlife will be wonderful. That has allowed me to be much more courageous, much more open with my patients. I can be much more that pillar of courage that they so much need when they're facing that life-threatening event than I ever could be. So there's no question that it has impacted me very, very positively in my daily practice of medicine.
Oh, and I can just feel that. What a godsend you are.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think, I think in some very mysterious way, I think any time you reach out to anybody lovingly and compassionately, even as a doctor to a patient, I am reasonably convinced in my year and a half of my practice here in Gallup, New Mexico, I'm seeing people have less side effects of my radiation therapy treatment than I've ever seen in my life. I'm seeing some remarkably good outcomes. I am... again, this is a hypothesis, but I've certainly got a lot of evidence behind it at this point in time. I think I almost hate to say this, but I think my ability to reach out to people compassionately and lovingly may actually be helping cure these people at a level that I couldn't do before.
Oh, wow. How wonderful. Now, can we move on to this communication after death? You know, you have got everything. You are the informational guru on death here. So tell me, what about the communication after death?
That's another website I set up. As I set up the NDE website over 8 years ago, very, very quickly I became interested in other experiences that were similar to NDE. So the next website I set up was devoted to after-death communication. And I'll abbreviate that ADC. So ADC is after-death communication. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, my study interest in the after-death communication website were spontaneous communications with the deceased. That can be deceased friends, loved ones, even pets. And these ADCs are spontaneous. That means they're not induced by a medium, if you will, or a psychic. They just occur spontaneously. you know, without them generally quite by surprise. So that's the type of ADCs that I've been studying. And we now have, oh my gosh, we have, I think in our entire collection of experiences, we have, if we're not at, I think we're probably at or over to about 2,000 ADCs at this point in time. So again, by far the largest study series of after-death communications that's ever been reported in the world. So it's that's another interesting thing I do, my second job.
Wow. And so tell me some of the experiences with the communications.
Well, they can occur at a variety of times. I think some of the most common ones are during dreams. In other words,
okay.
They may encounter the deceased and they say it's not a dream and it's much more conscious, much more lucid, sort of like NDEs. But I'm especially interested in non-dream NDEs because they are a little bit more evidential. These types of experiences, they can involve people sensing the awareness, be aware of the deceased being in their presence. They may actually see the deceased. They may hear the deceased. They may often feel a familiar touch from the deceased. Whenever people encounter the deceased in these after-death communications, one thing I would emphasize immediately is that these are not frightening or like ghostly hauntings. That is, as best I can tell from now studying around 2,000 of these experiences, that is not the way it works. These are joyous reunions when they encounter the deceased. It's even if they were chronically ill or died in a serious accident, the deceased are almost always picture-perfect health. And in fact, they may even appear years to even several decades younger than they were at the time of their death. So they're alert, communication is joyous, there's some very positive interaction that almost always occurs. It's very dramatic, obviously, and touching to people that experience these, which is, by the way, they're not rare. Near-death experiences, probably about 5% of the population has experienced them. For after-death communications, it's probably in the ballpark of around 10 to 20% of people have.
Wow. So you're saying that a dream, I often have dreams of a former husband that died, and he comes to it. And sometimes I notice, I mean, he's always alive and vital, and it's just like we're married. But it tells me exactly what I'm feeling about it, too. So it's interesting. My reaction is probably even more important than the reaction of seeing him. Is that possible?
Absolutely. You know, again, we all have dreams, and I've even encountered my deceased father in a dream, and if it's dreamlike and it goes like any other dream and there's no particular higher level of consciousness, that's probably not a true ADC dream. However, if you do have that sense of alertness, if it's a dream but you know darn good and well it's not really a dream, and actually one of the strongest barometers for the reality of an ADC dream is the sense of realness to it. In other words, if you wake up and go, that was real, that was no dream, I know that was real. If there's a strong and immediate and lasting sense that this was a real experience, it probably was.
Okay, gotcha. That's good. That's good information. Now, let me ask you about something else. Alzheimer's, when a person dies and doesn't have all of the mental facilities, I mean, it's just not working there. What do you think that they would go through the same experience?
Oh, you mean of a near? Yeah, absolutely. You mean like a same experience, like a near-death experience, or be able to communicate lucidly in an after-death communication?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. There's no question that my research indicates that near-death experiences, in other words, when we die, I mean, these are all experiences happening when you're totally unconscious or clinically dead. So I'm quite confident that people that have Alzheimer's, once they physically die, that they're going to suddenly be very lucid and have a very alert experience. A good analogy is very, very young children. Very often in NDEs, their degree of consciousness and alertness and awareness and their mental functioning is far higher and far quicker than would be commensurate with their physical age. And I think we see the same thing with Alzheimer's. So there's almost certainly, from drawing analogy of people that are unconscious, clinically dead, or you know, extremely young or extremely ill people that have severe mental impairment at the time of their NDE, No question that Alzheimer's would be expected to have the same kind of conscious, lucid experiences. And certainly with after-death communications, unfortunately, Alzheimer's is not a rare cause of death. So we have a number of after-death communications where the person died of Alzheimer's.
Really?
And yet, in all of these after-death communications, in fact, I can't even think of a single exception, in all of these after-death communications where Alzheimer's disease was the cause of death, the person, when they are encountering the living person, they see them as the picture of health, full mental functioning, no hint of the impairment of their Alzheimer's disease.
Wow. Wow, that's good to know. That's very good to know. Now tell me what this information would mean to the world if we could all get over this death as sad experience. What would this mean for us?
I think the best I can say is that the world might change somewhat in the direction that I've changed over the time that I've been studying this. It's really dramatic when you lose your fear of death. It allows you to have the courage to live more out loud, more strongly, more alive than you ever did before, because you don't have that overlay of fear. And you don't have the overlay of fear of the death of other people. When a lot of people go through some prolonged, even years of mourning or grief or impairment of their life, when a loved one, parent, friend, family member, pet dies.
Absolutely.
And if they all understood as clearly and vividly as I do that death is not the end, but it's actually the beginning of an existence far more wonderful, believe me, far more wonderful than we're experiencing on life, in our earthly life here, I think that would really change that issue of grief. And then finally, the values and the after effects of NDEs, if people could really understand that loss of fear of death, a firm understanding of the reality of an afterlife, not as a hypothesis or a hope, but a fact, if they could understand the extreme importance of our earthly lessons, which evolve around, according to NDEers, loving relationships, positive things that we can learn, I think so many people would be much more positive, much more appropriate, much more loving, much more compassionate. No doubt about that, if everybody on this earth suddenly had an NDE and suddenly had those types of changes, this world would be dramatically changed for the better. This would dramatically end war, disharmony, disunity, crime. I mean, all of that could largely be a part of the past, and we could truly enter a golden age of paradise on Earth. But, you know, unfortunately, earthly life is difficult, and I don't see that happening. I think important shows like yours and the messages I bring forward to the world, I think we can help a little bit. We can take steps, but it would be just dramatic if everybody could understand what near-death experiencers understand after they've had their experience.
Okay, so let me ask you kind of a weird question here. If people stopped believing in that death is not the end of existence as we know it, would that sort of help people? I mean, would the guilt be released from people, from murderers? Would more people not care about killing other people?
No, I don't think so. In fact, near-death experiencers abhor killing other people or crime or violence in general. I think a part of the lesson, the important, critical message of near-death experiences that we hear over and over and over again is that life is valuable, that life is a gift here. We're here, and there's lessons for us to be learned that are very, very important. We need to go through this life. We need to respect our own life and take care of it so that we can be strong and healthy and learn these lessons, and we need to take care and be compassionate toward other people so that they can live their life as healthy as best they can so that they can also learn their lessons. Jules, you nailed it earlier when you brought up the concept about how we're all interconnected, how we are in some very real spiritual way, we're all one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if people had that concept and that awareness, I think we'd be looking out for each other, for ourselves much better, we'd be looking out for others much better. And I think that would be overwhelmingly positive.
Okay, so I do agree with you on that. So it will lead to a further understanding of the spiritual realm in the world, a higher consciousness. But still, this information could not? I mean, would it be used by people who maybe have not had near-death experiences? I mean, some people out there are really, and I don't know why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah, go for it. This will be interesting.
Yeah, some people out there are really pathological killers, you know, and
yeah.
they don't really care right now whether it's spiritual or not.
Yeah.
So is this going to give them the go-ahead if the more this gets out, which is, it
yeah.
is an extremely beautiful, beautiful message that I
yeah.
embrace. But
you know,
what about...
Yeah. You raise, actually, your point is very well taken. As I understand what you're concerned about, and it's very valid, you're saying, look, if there was a lot of people on the earth that really were that compassionate, that open, that loving toward other people, what about these pathologic individuals who would simply take advantage of people, who would take advantage of their openness, their loving, their compassion, and basically use and abuse them because they're simply trying to help other people? And unfortunately, that's very real. A lot of near-death experiencers come back and run into that. I mean, their willingness to give may be misinterpreted by these pathologic people as weakness, as something to take advantage of. And it's tragic. It's pathetic when I hear these stories from the near-death experiencers. And yet, I remain extremely confident that the path toward our lessons on earth are those lessons of loving relationships towards others, of compassionate, of reaching out, of extending ourselves, of basically taking a risk even. And I think, you know, certainly, you know, you have to have a measure of common sense and caution, but, you know, it's even these pathologic people, even some very hardened people, I can tell you in my own personal life, it is astounding how many patients can come in, you know, cold, distant, stone-faced, non-communicative, and if you just treat them with respect, compassion, and love, give me a few weeks while they're under treatment, it is remarkable the great majority, Jules, of the patients that I've had like that open up, become, they're often the ones that by the end of their course of weeks and weeks of radiation treatment are the happiest, the ones that are smiling the most, and certainly the patients that are most appreciative. So I think that's, you know, while there is that issue, that cautionary note, you know, I think there's also a very positive. I think you can reach some of the most hardened, seemingly distant people you could imagine. I have, and it works.
Wow. That is wonderful, wonderful. Now, we're almost out of time, but I do want to tell everybody that they can go to the blog site on my host page, and it has all of his websites. All three. There's out-of-body experience, after-death communication, and near-death experience research foundation. You can just click on those, and it will take you directly there. I've got to tell you, his websites are incredible. And also, on a side note, I'm a hypnotherapist by trade, and I have had people that called me up and were absolutely shaken because they did not know how to express their experience with near death, and really their physicians, or they didn't have a place where they can go. And I've always referred them to your site because that's where
that.
They can get the most information. And then there's an overwhelming sense of calmness that comes about with them to know that, you know, they're not crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Near-death experiences are a blessing. It is, their people are very fortunate, and their lives will probably be changed very much for the better for those that not just go through a near-death experience, but grow through a near-death experience.
Absolutely. So are you're in the process of doing a new scientific research. Did I hear you say you're in the process of writing a book?
Yeah, our book is going to contain large numbers of research studies from analyzing this mammoth population of near-death experiences, so about a year and a half. So stay tuned. It'll be out at some future time, but it'll be Evidence of Heaven is the tentative name of it. So and a half down the line, that'll be a very much detailed discussion and presentation of what we've been talking about tonight.
And what about a further study? Did I see that?
Yeah, that'll be, well, you know, we continue to study. We have so much data And so many people that have been so wonderful sharing their experiences over all these years. You know, we do, you know, fairly major studies quite regularly, and we'll have them in the book or try to publish them at other outlets as we go along.
How wonderful. Okay, well, we are out of time, but I've just got to say, when you get your book, or even before, this is such a fascinating subject, come back onto the show. I want to really get the book out there in the world. You can always count on me. It's something that everybody needs to fully understand. And I got to say, Dr. Jeff, that I really consider you a blessing to the world. And
well, thank
I
you
really,
so much.
Really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, I really appreciate it, too. These experiences are a profound message of hope, not only for the one experiencing it, but for the entire world. It's been a real honor to share that with your listeners tonight.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Wonderful. And to all of my wonderful listeners, I will talk to you later in the week. Thanks.
You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio, hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, handsome. Are we done? I hear a click. I think that would be it. Okay.